Blog Talk Radio.
And I can make a firm pledge under my plan, no family making less than $250,000.
Let me say it as simply as I can.
Any form of
transparency
taxes
and the rule of law will be the touchstone.
You got a business
of this president.
That you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Even presidents need reminding that our rights come from nature and God and not from government. The right that makes all the difference now is the right to choose our own leaders. And you are entitled to the clearest possible choice, because the time for choosing is
Missouri
drawing near.
Grassroots Radio is proud to present your favorite hillbilly, Mr. Kevin Harned.
Your favorite hillbillies, hopefully, because in studio we've got Dean Whiteman
hey.
Here with us tonight.
Hi, Kevin. How you doing tonight?
Doing great, Dean. Thanks for swinging by and trying to salvage me. you've heard me alone before. It's pretty frightening.
Quit it.
So we've got some interesting stuff coming up, though, and one of that would happen to be we've got Earl Williams calling in at the 8 o'clock hour, and we are going to talk some fair tax.
Fair tax.
Do you think those two go together?
No, that's an oxymoron.
It is an oxymoron, but we're going to talk about it anyways. And Earl thinks that he can line us out and let us know how we can make it as fair as possible. You know, being human beings, we are flawed. I know that some don't believe that.
No, that's true.
But we are flawed, and the best that we can do is the best that we can do. So we are going to look at one of the better proposals that I have heard on the tax scene, as far as that goes. You know, a lot of people bring objections up whenever you hear them, whenever you hear the fair tax. But hopefully Earl will clear some of that up for him. And I'm not going to say that it's perfect. But for sure, what we have now is not perfect.
Right.
Whenever you're looking at over 76,000 pages of tax code, it's anything but. And
76,000?
Over.
Wow.
I mean, we're probably closer to 78,000 from, and I was talking to Earl, I guess yesterday, and he was talking about, I believe he told me that it's approaching 78 now.
Oh,
so
that's a great read.
So it's
I couldn't put it down.
Talk about cutting down on the human population. If you gave them that,
straight to bed.
Straight to sleep. It ain't happening.
Nope.
So, but we've got a few things that have been going on. Of course, we've got the embassy debacles all over the country.
Gosh,
and all over the world, I should say.
Right,
countries all over the world. So it's a situation.
What's your take on that?
My take is, Jeremiah Wright would say, roosters are coming. I mean, the chickens are coming home to roost, and I mean that for the administration.
That sounds like Dr. Phil.
Not for the. I don't think you'd confuse Jeremiah Wright with Dr. Phil.
No.
But I mean that for the administration, not the country. It's unfortunately, if we elect, president is reelected, then maybe for the country. I can say that we end up with the government that we deserve, ultimately.
Well, you know, I heard a great quote.
Okay. And who might that be from?
Dampy? The president, once elected, is not just the president of the people that voted for him. He's the president of the whole country.
Well, absolutely.
He does need to take everything and everyone into consideration.
Now, that's not coming off of that recent Romney quote.
Oh,
or
gosh, I hope
video,
not. I read it somewhere.
No,
do I lose credence?
No. I'm just saying that it's just since the hubbub about the video that was released, and then now come to find out it's had 1 to 2 minutes edited out of the middle video that was shot at a private reception, that the person that shot the video said that he didn't realize his recorder was off, and he turned it back on.
Right. That's my normal comment for that.
Yeah. That's pretty sad, really.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff. I mean, you remember all the stuff that that blew up whenever Aiken interviewed by Charles Jaco here in St. Louis.
Sure do.
The left jumped all over it.
They loved it.
Progressives hammered on that baby, tied everybody and their brother to it.
Yeah. Made sure he stayed in the race because they thought it was a done deal.
And the president, to me, made one of the largest. I can't say that it's a mistake, but he made a statement that ought to be leading on every news cast, well, as far as I'm concerned.
Lay it on me.
I'm going to play this little clip. It's from the 12th, I believe.
Okay.
It is, following the Libya embassy debacle, where we had four of our ambassadors, or four of our folks, our ambassador and three others killed. And let's let the president tell you his version of what went down.
Okay.
Already, many Libyans have joined us in doing so. And this attack will not break the bonds between the United States and Libya. Libyan security personnel fought back against the attackers alongside Americans. Libyans helped some of our diplomats find safety, and they carried Ambassador Stevens' body to the hospital, where we tragically learned that he had died.
Why am I not hearing this anywhere? Why am I not hearing that? The whole thing, and I want to play it one more time, but let's keep in mind, whenever we're listening to this, he's saying that the Libya security forces, whom we hired, because we wouldn't give, to my understanding, our Marines bullets.
Oh, brother.
So we hire their Libya security forces. He said they fought alongside. No. Unfortunately, President, they didn't. He said that they showed them a safe house or pointed them to safety. Yes, right before they pointed the mob to where they went.
Oh, no.
That's the reports that I'm as they're doing their investigation, it's even coming out further. So they point them out after they move them out of the building, tell the mob where they're at, and then they took them to the hospital. They drug his dead body through the streets, taking souvenir photographs the entire time.
Now, I had read on CNN's report, they said that some guys went inside. They found him to still be alive. A group of guys threw up their fists in happiness, screaming Allah Akbar, meaning God is great, that they could find this man and he was still alive and maybe saving his life, and they brought him out, and yeah, that's the way they made it, as though they were trying to take him to the hospital.
One of the clips,
that video,
one of the clips that I heard of had him chanting Osama, Osama, or Obama, we're all
that.
Osama.
No.
Yes, and this on the heels, I mean, while they are pursuing legal action and everything else against somebody that supposedly put together or produced this piece
that supposedly
enraged everybody, even though that they found out that Al-Qaeda is more and more and more and more rooted into this.
This guy's a good scapegoat, though.
Yeah. I mean, while they're doing all of that, what about the Democratic National Convention? I mean, wouldn't you think that would play in a little more to this whole chant of Obama, Obama, we're all Osama? Whenever they spent 4 days touting how Obama had killed Osama?
Yeah.
Didn't that just conclude?
It sure did.
I mean, how come that correlation is not being met?
You know what? That's a wonderful thought, too. I never even put that together. I hadn't really thought of that.
Oh,
I know
so
they love him.
And
Obama.
Especially whenever you see that chant of Osama, Osama, or Obama, we're all Osama. I mean, that's that to me smacks a little bit more of a backlash against the Democratic National Convention.
You think?
Yeah, I think so. So listen to this one more time, and I want you to pick up what the president said, and I want to know why this isn't everywhere, and I mean everywhere.
Already, many Libyans have joined us in doing so. And this attack will not break the bonds between the United States and Libya. Libyan security personnel fought back against the attackers alongside Americans. Libyans helped some of our diplomats find safety, and they carried Ambassador Stevens' body to the hospital, where we tragically learned that he had died.
Unfortunately, President, I think they probably realized that before, as they're sticking cameras within 3 inches of his nose and snapping shots.
Yes.
So at that, like I said, that's all. I just don't know why that's not being scrutinized.
Now, how do they have footage of this? They've got footage.
They got footage of it, and it's all from video cameras and everything else.
Well, CNN telling me on my phone that the whole thing was them trying to carry him to the hospital, and the whole crowd was not mob related?
Because they're hoping everybody is just following. Just they're not going to pursue any further evidence and just take them at their word.
Oh, my gosh.
Again, spoon feeding. And that's not even it's a shame, because CNN had been doing a little bit better of a job. I mean, I know MSNBC is solely and exclusively the Obama network.
Well, they're not really letting the American people know here. See, my thing is Egypt has always been fairly close to America. So now they don't like America. This isn't just going to be Egypt.
Oh, it's not. It's over 21 countries. Well, we've got Marines right now that are being deployed to these countries. We personally know one that just got a call a week ago or so.
Yeah.
And
oh, yes, we do.
And he's headed over there now. I mean, we are going to get a redeployment, at least a small redeployment in countries all over the Middle East, including Iran. So they can try to hide it, and they can try to conceal it as much as they want. It's a disaster, and it's
so we're cutting down our military. We can't even give our guys bullets. We're splitting them all up after cutting them down, breaking them into 21 different countries that all hate us.
You want to hear something weird? And I'm gonna.
That's not weird.
Unfortunately, it makes sense under the present the way that we are proceeding presently.
I'm scared.
What would you say if I? This is eerie. To me, it's eerie. It's an old clip that I had from over a year and a half ago of Louis Farrakhan.
Okay.
Right? So I had split up some of the speech that he gave to a thriving large crowd, tens of thousands of people, and how this guy spews this kind of stuff all the time, but I want you to pay attention to the cities that he mentions over a year and a half ago. Now, keep that in mind. This is over a year and a half ago. Look at what's going on in the Middle East and see if you see any correlation to exactly what he's saying over a year and a half ago.
Okay.
What you're looking at in Tunisia, in Egypt, in Yemen, in Jordan, in Libya, in Bahrain, and soon, very soon, in all the nations of the world, and even sooner, to take place in America. So don't you get bent out of shape with what you see happening there. While it's happening there, you better prepare, because it will be coming to your door, America.
Wow.
You notice the nations that he mentioned in that?
Yes.
A year and a half ago?
He's a prophet.
Yeah, he's a prophet. He's an insider. What he is. Mr. Nation of Islam.
Wow, you're exactly right. He nailed it.
Nailed it once again.
What you're looking at
over a year and a half ago
in Tunisia, in Egypt, in Yemen, in Jordan, in Libya, in Bahrain, and soon, very soon, in all the nations of the world, and even sooner, to take place in America. So don't you get bent out of shape with what you see happening there. While it's happening there, you better prepare, because it will be coming to your door,
So once again, Louis Farrakhan, and I'm thinking that was like, I'm thinking February or March of 2011.
Is that a threat?
Who knows? I mean, obviously, he can't make a threat.
The first time I listened to it, it seemed like it was just, you know, well-placed information. But the second time, it's almost like, yeah, he sounds like he's on the
If we took that clip and we put a picture, let's say, of Ted Nugent on it and put it on YouTube, maybe they would be knocking on Ted's door tomorrow asking.
Oh, you better believe they would.
Get him locked out.
Absolutely.
Asking him what's up. So Louis Farrakhan, being the insider, and honestly the loose cannon that he is, and folks, I don't know if you've heard much of this stuff, this guy's stuff, but it is hours of this kind of diatribe, hours, and it's certainly something to think about. And I just thought when I heard that, and I heard the countries that he was mentioning. Back then, I thought it was very, very, very odd. If anybody wants to call in, feel free to call in at 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. Dean, did you see on a more local front? Well, one other thing, you know how they've always got the hot mics and they don't know the mics are hot?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the DNC convention, they had Louis Farrakhan was there, you know, and he was speaking to a group, and there was a hot mic going. At least somebody fed this to me, and of course they were anonymous, and told me that this was Louis at the DNC.
That is the white man's tactic. He don't want no black president. You've seen it all through history. They never give black man credit. Jesus Christ, black man. Babe Ruth, black man. Madonna, sleeps with black men. Think about it.
Well, I mean, I can't verify the sources. That got sent to me anonymously, but it was supposed to be Louis at the DNC.
I'm pretty sure that's not Louis Farrakhan. The voice sounds a little off. Sounds a little more like, I don't know, maybe Dave Chappelle or not Louis.
Well, you know, you might have a point.
Who sent that?
If you do listen to it, it does sound a little bit more like Conspiracy Brother off of...
there you go. You nailed it.
Off of Undercover Brother, the movie with Dave Chappelle.
He's awful close.
He is? He's awful close.
Wow.
Not quite.
He needs just to tone it down a hair.
Just a hair. But I did see on a more local... Thanks for that correction. So we're going to put out that disclaimer. This wasn't Louis Farrakhan at the DNC.
We're not sure.
We can't validate our sources. You know, there's another one. I heard that CNN would not, or no, I'm sorry, it was MSNBC, would not air. Somebody else has been playing, or at least released, President Obama making some comments about redistribution of wealth.
Yeah.
And how he supports it.
Right.
MSNBC won't play it because they couldn't verify the source.
You're kidding me. They know it's the president, though.
Absolutely. Without a shadow of a doubt. They even have video with it. But as far as I know, they've got video with it.
Why do you need the source?
They can't validate its authenticity either.
Oh, quit it.
No,
you know what?
Serious.
When I was growing up, there used to be something you couldn't even get a source from someone that was private. It always has been, or I always thought it was. Nowadays, I guess if you don't have a source, you can't be reprimanded, so they're not even going to give you the opportunity.
Nowadays, they go after the source more than ever.
Deep throat.
Yeah. You're showing our age. You're showing our age. Speaking of our age... In the news, I saw a story that was extremely weird, Dina.
Yeah.
Don't know. I mean, if you could fill us in on it. But a mom is arrested.
I did.
And
hear.
Jailed because for allowing her children to play outside
in Texas.
In yes. Texas, of all places.
It's in Texas. And this Texas mom says that she was right there. The kids were 6 and 9 years old. She says she was in a lawn chair watching them the whole time. Her next-door neighbor is the one that made the call to the police. I guess she felt humiliated, she said, but what I liked about it is her name is Mrs. Cooper. She told the KPRC that the arresting officer told her, "We're here for you," as they took her in, booked her, and kept her overnight 18 hours. Before
18 hours?
18 hours. She's suing the neighbor and the police force, the La Porte Police Department.
As far as I know, too, they're in a cul-de-sac? Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So they're in a cul-de-sac.
Quiet street.
Her kids are riding the bikes. Scooters.
Right.
And the cops get called on her. And I did see that she had also made a comment that things were a little dicey with the neighbor these days. But
can you imagine?
If you're spending 18 hours in jail for the president and everybody else is always trying to push the kids to play, right?
Yes.
Isn't
absolutely.
That the big thing?
That is the big thing.
So,
get them to play outside, keep them thin. There's hypocrisy all around.
Tell me that hasn't changed so much since we were a kid.
Oh, it has.
And I mean, whenever we were growing up, and, you know, that was in the horse and buggy days, of course.
Yeah, we're going back a few.
Whenever we could literally spend all day outside. I mean, as a matter of fact, our mothers would shoo us out.
Weekend.
You know, it's pretty outside. What are you doing inside?
Yeah.
Go outside and play.
Don't come back till dinner.
Yes.
That's right. I remember that.
Or make sure you're home before dark.
Yes.
And look at society. Let me ask you this, just taking that into consideration. Do you think there's more laws on the books to protect us today than there were then?
To protect us or to protect the criminals? This is the way I look at it.
I'm just saying, look, I mean, again, here we go. You look at the books today, and there are so many more laws on the books than there was when we were kids.
Yep.
Are we safer?
No.
No, not. No.
And I would say we are less safe, but this is the question I have with many people. I'm sure that it was not safe back when we were kids also. Maybe we just didn't hear about it as much. But I'm not going to say it didn't happen here.
Well, no means. But I forgot what the figure is on how many kids disappear every single day. Now, I know that...
it's probably 100 times worse now.
I know the population is probably tripled, but I guarantee you it's way more than that percentage-wise on what's going on. I mean, we are literally... our culture... And the breakdown in our culture has really left us with some major issues.
No doubt about it.
But anyways, this is a little audio clip of that story with the mom.
All right, new at 10, a LaPorte mom taken to jail and charged for doing something many parents do every day, letting her kids play outside.
Yeah, she was arrested for child endangerment for allowing her kids to ride scooters around in their neighborhood cul-de-sac.
Local 2's Jennifer Bauer joins us live with how that mom is now fighting back. Jen.
You know, guys, I'm standing right now on a cul-de-sac. I can tell you there's not a lot of traffic, not a lot of cars. And that's exactly why this LaPorte mom says she and her husband moved specifically to that street because they wanted a safe place for their kids to grow up. She says she never thought something like this would happen.
This LaPorte mom says she was arrested and forced to spend the night in jail, all because she let her kids play outside.
Orange jumpsuit, in a cell, slammed the door for 18 hours.
Tammy Cooper says her kids, ages 9 and 6, were riding their scooters around the cul-de-sac where they live while she sat in her front yard and watched from a few feet away. A little while later, she says, a LaPorte police officer pulled up.
I went out there to see what he was here for, and he says, "No, ma'am, we're here for you." I said, "Oh, really? Why?" And that's when he proceeded to tell me that he had received a call from one of my neighbors that my kids were outside riding their scooters unsupervised. Said, "Well, ma'am, turn around, put your hands behind your back. You're under arrest for child endangerment."
Cooper says the allegations are absurd, and she insists her kids were never alone.
No, I was out there the entire time.
The charges were eventually dropped, but Cooper says the experience was humiliating and has now filed a lawsuit against the City of LaPorte Police Department, the arresting officer, and her neighbor, who reportedly made the call to police. We tried speaking to her.
You have no comment?
No, thank you.
Okay.
This stay-at-home mom says her kids are her life.
Everything that I do revolves around my children.
And now she wants justice.
And LaPorte Police issued a statement in part saying, "We are confident in the known actions of the responding officer."
Anyways, that's
on the scene that evening, upon which their office accepted charges of abandoning a child on Ms. Cooper. Now, if you would like to read the rest of LaPorte PD's statement, it is on our website. You can go to click2houston.com. As for Tammy Cooper, she does admit things between her and her neighbor are now awkward and a little tense. We're live tonight. Jennifer Bauer, KPRC, Local 2.
I can imagine that.
You think?
I guess there's a difference between we're here for you and we're here for you. Which is what she heard.
You know,
I never heard that audio bite first.
It didn't dawn on me, but you're 100% right.
Yeah. Wow. Sitting outside and the police roll up to take you in front of your children.
And how often does that really happen? Let's look around. I mean, quite frankly, whenever you look at...
Do we have a call?
No, we have a cell phone call as somebody forgot to turn their phone down. I apologize.
Oh, I do that.
I try. I seldom do, but you know what? Whenever you do, you're going to get called. There's a guarantee of that.
You're right.
So they'll have to wait and call back later. But outside of that, how many times do you think whenever we're dealing with planning and zoning or nuisance calls or anything else, is it disgruntled neighbors? What do you think the percentages are?
43.
You're right.
Wow, quit it. No, really,
I don't know how you nailed it, but yeah, you ought to guess the jelly beans in the jar.
Stop it.
So, I don't know. I'm making it up, so you're right.
Oh, okay.
That's the way the progressives do it. So, there was our progressive moment, and I'm not talking insurance. And I don't care what you say, those are still the worst commercials ever.
Oh, you Flo hater.
Oh, with a passion. Flo is horrible. Horrible. Yeah. On top of that, being a very liberal organization, Flo is horrible. You know what we're going to do?
Tell me.
Well, I'll tell you. We're going to cut into the Missouri Grassroots Minute, and that's with Terry Varner right as we speak.
Well, Terry.
This is the Grassroots Minute. Hobby Lobby, the store that you will find closed on Sundays, is a privately held retail chain with over 22,000 employees led by a conservative Christian family. They filed a lawsuit in the U.S. District Court opposing Obama's Health and Human Services Preventive Services mandate. The company now becomes the largest and only non-Catholic-owned business to file a lawsuit against the government's contraceptive mandate. The company's CEO and founder, David Green, said that the mandate would force a Christian-owned and operated business to provide without copay the morning-after pill, the week-after pill, in their health insurance plan, or face crippling fines of up to $1.3 million per day. We, the believers of the grassroots movement and freedom, need to show our support to Mr. Green and Hobby Lobby, just as you did when Chick-fil-A took the hit over family values and traditional marriage. Here we have another freedom-loving Christian-owned business standing up for what is right and what they believe. We simply cannot abandon our fellow conservatives when they are willing to face millions of dollars in fines for not going along with the Obamacare mandate and standing for their and our individual freedoms. A tip of the grassroots hat to Mr. Green and Hobby Lobby for challenging Obama's federal government. How about a Hobby Lobby Appreciation Day? This is Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
They walk a while, a country mile, in my hillbilly shoes.
You know, Dino, I've walked a few miles in these shoes.
Yeah, they're fine shoes.
Thank you. And back to the program. No, we've got a lot of serious stuff coming up on top of that. We've got Earl Williams' son, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I know an Earl Williams. Again, it's like Dave Court. I know a Dave Court way. And these close names are killing me. But Earl Williamson will be calling in, and he is going to be calling in around the 8 o'clock hour, and he is going to enlighten us, on the fair tax.
Well, I'd like to know how they can make it fair for everyone.
Well, again, and I'm sure we'll kind of touch on this with Earl, too, but... Whenever you look at the tax code right now, here's the problem. We've got Republicans and Democrats that neither one want to see this tax code go.
Right.
I mean, would you agree? I would say so
because they are making so much money.
Well, and it's power. I mean, there's nothing that wields as much power as the tax code. There really isn't. And in that turn, the Ways and Means Committee. Whenever you're looking at that, there's not a more powerful committee in my view than the Ways and Means Committee, and you're looking at the chair of the Ways and Means Committee. See, what happens is whenever one of them's out of power, they really don't want to get rid of it because they know how powerful it is, and all they've got to do is get back in power, and then it's their tool instead of the other side.
That makes sense.
And it's just for instance, I mean. We talk about lobbying and everything else. Honestly, if we look at it, you want to have campaign finance reform, there'd be no better place to start. Because let's say that I'm a window manufacturer, all right, Dino?
Okay, you're a window manufacturer.
Okay, so I send my lobbyists to hit on some of the people that sit on the Ways and Means Committee, okay?
Okay.
And in those meetings... we are very, very good to them, and we would really like to have tax rebates given to everybody that puts replacement windows in.
Well, sure.
What do you say? Do you think that's an influential position to be in?
Yes.
Thus, not the reason, and not wanting to get rid of it either. So.
Well, I can well understand that.
But the problem is exactly that, and that is it's not in need of just a simple reform, but
it's in need of a major overhaul.
Oh yeah, I mean it's a major redo. Period.
Yeah.
I mean if you look before 1913, some of the changes that were made on coining money and everything else as far as basically decoining money.
Right.
In 1913, I saw the judge now Napolitano on the other day, and he was talking about that, and he was talking about how when America was coining money, which Congress has given that authority, it was actually going up in value, 7%, 8%, so forth as it goes along. And I wish I'd have got this
wow.
sound clip in 1913, whenever they started printing money to the effect of changing the whole monetary system.
Down the value went.
93%.
93%.
Dropped in 1913. So it doesn't take long, and then we've got all the quantitative easing and everything else that's going on right now that is absolutely insane and is going to drive us off the cliff beyond a shadow of a doubt. So it's... And unfortunately, all the countries are doing it right now. I don't know. Maybe they think if they all devalue their money at the same time, that things will get better, or they can see. Here's the whole thing: if they devalue, let's say that the government owes, let's just make it a low figure, $1 trillion.
Okay, a nice even trillion,
a nice simple trillion. Right. I mean, there's nothing to a trillion,
no.
right? Yeah. Anyways, so they owe that. And let's say that I owe you $1 trillion, but let's say that whenever I go to pay you off, $1 trillion is worth a lot less.
Right.
So
I'm not happy.
You're not happy, but also, you know, it's reduced in a sick way. They look at it as reducing the amount that we owe. And that's why China got up in arms whenever we first started talking about quantitative easing, is because they hold so much of our notes.
Right.
And that's also, and as far as I'm concerned, a big factor on them wanting commodities. We started sending them commodities out the yin yang because they are a manufacturing base. They construct, they manufacture things over there. They are more interested in our commodities than our dollars. And whenever you look at cash for clunkers, even though that was one of the worst programs, by the way, ever.
Right.
Ever construed. And once again, one of the most hurtful to the folks that had the least amount of money, because these were a lot of cars that folks were using for transportation. And they didn't look at the used car market has gone up 20-25% minimum. It's probably gone up a lot higher than that.
That it has.
It's true. The price of used cars is ridiculous. And then you look at the used auto parts. I mean, there was a huge market for used auto parts. Well, they couldn't take any of the parts off of these cars that were traded in on cash for clunkers either, because they destroyed everything.
Yeah, sent it all to China, didn't they?
Sent it all to China. Whenever you had the Department of Defense cancel contracts with reloading companies for the spent brass, you had companies here that were employing people, especially down in Georgia, and they were utilizing all the spent brass that they had contracts with the Department of Defense with, and then they would reload them in Walmart and other places would carry them, and they were working a couple of shifts. Well, all of a sudden you get your contract canceled because they were going to chip up the spent brass and send it to China for less than what the people were paying for it to reload it.
Oh, no.
After that got out in the public and they got beat up on a little bit, they backed off. So, I mean, there's all kinds of instances that show that we, you know, that China is really pushing for our commodities more so than our dollars that keep getting devalued constantly as we move along.
That terrifies me, the commodity thing.
Well, sure, absolutely it does. And once again, we're going to have Earl on with us briefly, you know, talking about liberty things. There is a story right now of a contractor, a private citizen, that cleaned up a city lot
and got in trouble for it,
and is getting in trouble for it. And there's a classic example of, once again, our government run amok. I mean, a government that wants to be served instead of serving. And can you fill us in on the details?
Yeah, Mr. Fybush in Philadelphia. His name is Ori Fybush. He called the Redevelopment Authority 4 times, sent 7 written requests, and made 24 phone calls to the agency, asking them to take care of the eyesore right next to his place. And
this is a developer, right?
It is. Yeah. And there's an empty lot next to his coffee shop that had 40 tons of trash, 40 tons of debris.
More than a weekend's dumping.
So he's calling these people. He's writing letters, begging them to do it.
Not exactly blowing down the street.
No. So he thought, you know what? I'm going to take care of the mess himself. He spent $20,000 to clean this stuff up, to level the soil, added cherry trees. Park benches, fencing, he even repaved the sidewalk.
God.
He did. And then, after he did all the... See, that's where he messed up.
Hey, no good deed goes unpunished.
No, he was so thrilled on how gorgeous it was, but he had no permit. And you can't access or alter the property without a permit. And that was the downfall. So now the city is suing him... to make it back the way it was.
Oh, my
yes.
God. How do you do that?
Hello, America.
I mean, you see all the time these signs that say clean, fill, wanted. What are you, trash
yeah.
wanted?
20 trash tons? Wanted back. Yeah, bring it on back. And get those nasty cherry trees and sidewalk out of here. Can you
Unbelievable.
Imagine? It is.
You know, folks, right now you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is it's an effort to educate and also for you to participate. And anybody that would also, we're going to have Earl calling in right away. I mean, here very soon. So if you're going to call in very soon, because Earl is going to school or at least talk to us and educate us, hopefully, on fair tax. That ought to be very worthwhile.
Oh, definitely.
Again, we're talking about fair and tax being an oxymoron, but it is. It is. We've got to do something and do something drastic. The last thing we need is some minor revisions. We're gonna take a short break. You're listening to the Hillbilly Logic Show.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
We've got on the Missouri Grassroots website, too. Make sure that you get by there and see the Santa. We've got a program that we're trying to help out some families. Lisa has usually been explaining it for us, but it's some families in the, I believe, the Springfield area. And what it is, we're just trying to help them out at Christmas time.
Oh, that's
I was
nice.
Looking for the bumper or the commercial guy. I was unable to locate it. But anyways, get by the website, give that a visit if you can. If you can spare a few, it'd be a great gift and a great gesture to do at that time of the season. So it's a little easier to give right now, possibly, than as we get closer to Christmas. You know, I'm going to play, before we get to Earl, and we do have Earl on the line. Glad to have him on. I want to play one more time the comment made by President Obama on 9/12, and I really want people to think about what he said in this clip.
Already, many Libyans have joined us in doing so, and this attack will not break the bonds between the United States and Libya. Libyan security personnel fought back against the attackers alongside Americans. Libyans helped some of our diplomats find safety, and they carried Ambassador Stevens's body to the hospital, where we tragically learned that he had died.
That ought to be everywhere, folks.
No doubt about it.
I mean, we're talking about Aiken, we're talking about everything. We're talking about a video that was shot and that had a 1 to 2 minute clip taken out of the middle of it because a person said that he didn't know his video recorder went off. And really, whenever you're even looking at what was said in that right there, what he said, whenever he's talking about the Libya force fighting beside us, not so. About our Marines, he didn't mention the fact that we didn't have bullets to fight. Whenever he's talking about a fight alongside, obviously they didn't. Not only that, they led him to a safe house and then pointed it out to the mob. So
that is
screwed up. Did they take him to the hospital? No, they drug his dead body through the streets, and he may have ended up there, but taking souvenir pictures all along. That whole little clip is a total disaster, and why I'm not hearing more of that, I have no idea, but it is an absolute shame. Dean, are you ready to talk some fair tax?
Yeah, let's get Earl on the line.
Well, let's do that. Hopefully he is sitting by. Earl, are you with us, brother?
Yeah, I've been enjoying the program tonight.
Well, thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to have you on here with us. A lot of folks may not know you. A lot of folks, I'm sure, do. But Earl Williamson is here to talk to us tonight about fair tax. Earl, is there such a thing?
Actually, While there is no such thing as perfection, I would say that this is as close to fair as you're going to find.
Well, that's awesome. So
because the three goals for the fair tax were that it needed fairness, it needed to be simplicity, have simplicity, and it needed an efficiency in terms of being able to be collected. It's kind of a neat thing.
And whenever we look back through history, I mean, any time we've had taxation, we've got issues that arise out of it that's not always, well, let's just say, that end up being corrupt. And right now we are looking at, from what you told me yesterday, we're looking at a tax code that's over 78,000 pages long, right?
Yeah, and that's without counting the number of pages that will be put in with Obamacare, which are several thousand.
Isn't that crazy? How anybody can say that anything it can even become close to being legitimate or fair and be 78,000 pages is insane.
Well, yeah, you're right. It's to the point where the common man can't understand it. And now you have to go to the intermediary and count on the intermediary being right. And if there's any kind of a mistake, well, the intermediary doesn't get punished for it. You do. It's just crazy. And there's no need for it. It's such a drag on the economy. It's such a waste. There's so much about it that's just wrong. Let me start with the following. Okay? For those of you who don't know me, I'm a retired math and science teacher. I never thought that I would spend my retirement talking about the sexy subject of tax codes. But that's what I do now. I drive a school bus. All my problems are behind me. And I do that to suppress my nasty habits of hunting, fishing, and fair tax. And I'm sad to say I've hardly touched a gun. I have hardly touched a rod. I am spending more and more and more time with this fair tax. Tonight I'm hoping to maybe change some people's points of view about some things.
Okay. Let me ask you one thing, too, that happens to be in the past. Now, you were, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but you were a past state bus driving champion?
Yes.
And how does that competition come about?
Well, it's not quite like the cartoons from Crankshaft, but... There are three primary aspects. There's a written examination that comes from a number of sources. There is a defect test where you have 6 minutes to find six official defects on a school bus.
That's pretty cool.
And then there is the driving competition, which includes... Let me see if I can get them all. There's railroad crossing. There's student pickup, right turn, offset alley, diminishing clearance, straight line, backup alley, parallel park, curb line, stop line.
Pretty extensive, it sounds like. Now, whenever you won the state, did you end up going to a national? Or do they not have that?
Actually, they have an international. In the year that I went, I got to go to Boston and compete, and I came in 11th out of over 50 in my division from across the United States and Canada.
No kidding.
And the gal that I beat straight up, she drove for a contractor. That's an interesting thing. I'm an independent school district. She drives for a contractor. So she got to compete as the highest contractor, and she beat me at the international, and she came in seventh. We've become good friends. I think the world of oh yeah.
Well, that's pretty neat.
Good people.
Yeah. Yeah, well, congratulations, Earl. That's neat. That is something that is totally underrated. Whenever you're looking at careers, as far as you guys are saints in my eyes, that's not an easy chore.
I'm picturing the movie Speed.
Not quite. No. As a matter of fact, when I run the course and competition, I'm running it pretty much in first gear. It's a control. It's a finesse. It's not how quickly you can get there. And we do not have a student toss.
Okay. Or nobody pulls like any stuffed animals across the street or anything in front of you. Nothing like that.
Dodge the squirrel.
Man, they have been insane lately. I need to dodge two over here tonight. Yeah, they've gone crazy. They're suicidal. But
well, you have to understand, you know, in terms of driving a school bus, I was coming back with my academic team one night, and it was a snowstorm, and I turned on the highway and going through this little wide spot in the road where there was an S-curve, and as I came around the backside of that S-curve, there was a doe laying in the middle of the road because it was the warmest spot around, and she was looking off, and there was no way to dodge her.
Oh, no.
And I hollered at my kids, and over her we went, and they didn't feel anything.
Yeah.
And they didn't even find fur on the bus, but apparently, quick for her.
Hey, you did what was right in behalf of the kids, and you can't take any chances on these.
You don't dodge, no.
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 And school buses, here's a word that you don't associate with a school bus. Nimble.
Right.
For being what they are a remarkably nimble vehicle.
And believe it or not, folks, we are going to get to taxes, but I just wanted to lay some down. I want to lay some background out there, too, and I find this pretty interesting.
That is interesting.
You know, last week we did a story about a guy in, was it Norway?
Yeah.
That dodged an elk and hit a bear. So he missed the elk, but hit a bear. So it's nothing like that, no stories like that. But Earl, let's get into some fair tax. So let's say that somebody is coming in. They've heard the terminology fair tax, but they're not up on any of the details. How would you start out with them just out of the gate?
Okay, and again, I'm not sure exactly how far this person is. First of all, there are taxes on consumption, and there are taxes on production. And when you have taxes on income, when you have taxes on business, when you have corporate taxes, these are all taxes that are on production. Now, do you gentlemen consider taxes to be a reward or a punishment? Just out of curiosity.
Punishment. Not really punishment. I know we need it, but I don't think we need that much taken from us.
No, I also as a punishment.
Most people would recognize that a tax is a form of punishment. Now, when you punish children, do you get more of the behavior you're punishing or less?
Less.
Correct. That's what the goal of punishment is. Well, if we tax production, what does that do for production in this country?
Brings it to a screeching halt.
Well, that's the way it's been. We've had it for a progressive income tax for basically 100 years. And we'll be celebrating that birthday on April the 15th.
There won't be many.
2013. And after 100 years of taxing production, we've almost tax production completely out of the country.
Oh, we sure have. That's our centennial.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of examples. I'm old enough that I happen to remember when Chrysler Corporation merged with Daimler-Benz.
Mm-hmm.
And I never understood why it became Daimler-Chrysler.
Right.
But when I got into the fair tax and was looking at this stuff and began to understand what was going on, I realized that the corporate lawyers simply looked at the tax code in the United States. They looked at the tax code in Germany. And from a business perspective, the tax code in Germany was so much better for business that the merger went through and it became Daimler Chrysler instead of Chrysler Daimler. And all those high paying corporate jobs went overseas.
Oh.
And see that, I mean, that's something that is not prevalent as far as information that's out there. And I would say that the majority of people wasn't privy to that.
I didn't know that.
Well, here's more to it. There's much more to it than that. I know that wages are lower overseas and that the complaint is, oh, the labor is so cheap that they just go for cheap labor. And that's not the case. If you take a look at the United States, we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world at 35%. Okay? Even communist China is only 25% as a corporate tax rate when they bother to collect it. Okay? Now, because it's a tax on production, we make our goods here, we tax them 35% and send them overseas and wonder why we're not competitive.
Right,
no doubt.
In order to be competitive, some of these businesses have to produce overseas to avoid that taxation so that they can be competitive on the world market.
Now, and this is one aspect that, that again, that people, you know, don't discuss very often just over the dinner table. So it's obvious that it affects it and affects it drastically. A lot of people will put the labor up front. If you had to yourself assemble a list of, let's say, three, you got labor, you got tax code, and you got regulation, what do you think has the greatest effect on businesses and where they locate?
I would say probably the tax code would be number one, and regulation would be number two. And labor is not an issue. I mean, seriously, I know that they have corporations that have built factories in China.
Right.
And don't get me wrong, Chinese workers work hard, but they're actually pushing the building of new plants to the interior of China. They're complaining that the wages along the coast are too high in China now. And this has actually happened. I got this from another presenter of Fairtax. He said in this one case, this company was manufacturing a product in China, and basically at the end of this, there was a collator that was putting sheets of material out and stacking them up, and there was something wrong with the collator. And if any of this material hit the floor, it was worthless. It couldn't be used. So nobody in the plant knew how to fix this. So to fix it, they hired 12 Chinese to stand around at the end of this production and catch the sheets of material as they shot up in the air, not letting them touch the ground, and then they'd run up and they'd lay them down in the pile until somebody from the United States could come, take a look at it. 5 minutes later, after they have turned and adjusted things, it's back on and it's collating on its own. Look, middle management doesn't exist in a lot of the Chinese plants. And you have the logistics of moving stuff to the from the United States to China, from China back to the United States, where, you know, the United States is the great consumer. By the time you get done, there is not that much to be gained by going to some of these foreign countries.
You know, I mean, whenever we were younger, we had a manufacturing base, and we traded that off for a service-based industry, and we were told and convinced and everything else how much greater that is. In an up economy, you may be able to even make more money in that service-based industry. The thing is whenever the economy hits a halt like it has, it all comes back to manufacturing again. That service industry dries up. Because people start cutting their own lawn, they start painting their own house. They do without, you know. There's times that they will stretch things out. Right now, the cars on the road are the oldest they've ever been in like 30 years. You know, we're driving around. I think the average age of the average car on the road is like 7 years right now, and it's because, you know, people are they can't go out and purchase all the new stuff and hire people to do things that and they will do it themselves. So the service industry suffers, and now we're starting to outsource the service industry. by also through, you know, all different kinds of means, whether it's illegal immigration, whether it's also call your local cable company and you'll end up in India or the Philippines, you know. And now I saw where they're starting to outsource some attorney services. So that's whenever we might see a difference. That's whenever we might see a difference in Congress, is whenever they're starting to outsource the attorneys, because that's getting a little too close to home, as far as I can see. But anyways, it's interesting, and all these things do play a factor.
Have you ever known somebody to turn down overtime because it would put them in a different tax bracket?
Yes.
I have.
Yes, and I also know...
Gee, what does that do for production?
Right, absolutely.
I mean, this is an amazingly wicked piece of stuff. Let's take a look at, you know, the tax code. People have said that our current tax code is broken. I take a slightly different point of view. I'm suggesting that, no, it's not. If we understand... that what we have is a progressive income tax. Who is the philosophical founder of the progressive income tax? Income tax itself is an old idea, but a progressive income tax is relatively new. Do either of you know who the philosophical founder of that is?
I am going to say...
I'm going to go with FDR.
I am going to go with, was it Joseph Stalin?
Oh, good one.
Actually, go back to Karl Marx.
Karl Marx, okay.
Philosophical founder of Marxism, communism, socialism. The second plank of the Communist Manifesto is a heavily progressive income tax. Now, it is designed to destroy free market economies. Here are some of the benefits of an income tax code, any income tax code. You need to think about this. The first charge I'm going to lay on is that it enslaves the citizen, and I will prove that, I think, reasonably here in a little bit. It does not provide for equal treatment under the law. You cannot say that if you're in the 35% tax bracket that you're being treated anywhere near the same as the guy that's being, you know, in the 15% tax bracket. Which makes it divisive of the citizenry, which I find offensive. Under tax law, in the tax courts, you are guilty until proven innocent, which is exactly the opposite of what this country was set up as.
Amen.
It is a tremendous source of corruption. The lobbying that goes on in Washington, where 40% of lobbying in Washington, I got no problem with. Use my product, use my company, we do great things, we have great products. I got no problem with that. But the ones that come up and say, oh, please, Mr. Politician, write me a loophole in the tax code, and we'll bring you workers to turn out the vote and, you know, contributions
right.
for your campaign, and
right.
we invite radio and TV ads to make you smell good. You know?
No doubt.
That's corruption.
And that's
but
doing
that's,
that.
That's the worst kind. That's an institutionalized corruption.
Sure. And that's...
disregards... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there's the heart and soul of the Ways and Means Committee, correct? I mean, that this is... If I'm a window manufacturer, like I was talking about earlier, I go, I lobby the Ways and Means Committee, and guess what? All of a sudden, the rebates start getting applied to any consumers or taxpayers that put in replacement windows and on, correct?
You're exactly right. You know, and it's not equal treatment. What about the guy that does the stuff that is new rather than a retrofit?
Right.
You know, if a tax break for one company is good, isn't a tax break for all companies better?
There was
Aren't we supposed to have a level playing field?
Sure.
Supposed to.
There was a situation
you know,
in the construction industry that I ran into, back during the Bosnian event, where we were over Bosnia-Herzegovina. And right after that, the legislatures decided that it would be really nice to help the folks out. Whenever they, if an employer would hire them, they would pay for half their salary. Well, I'd worked in the construction industry for a long time, and I'd worked around one company that was actually, I'm going to say them, St. Charles Acoustic. Now, this company had been around for decades, had always been a taxpayer, everything else, and all of a sudden they couldn't buy a job because this company that hired exclusively, and this is what the guy told me from them at that time, he hired exclusively Bosnians and was getting half of his wages paid for. All of a sudden you got a tax-paying company that's been around for decades competing against somebody that the government, through tax dollars, is helping to
subsidize
and compete with them. And quite frankly, it was wreaking havoc on them.
And yeah, that's all a part of this. I mean, it drives jobs overseas. It taxes production. It enables politicians to pick winners and losers. It hides those who put in the loopholes. I mean, you take a look at this wonderful thing that we've uncovered recently where, $5 to $7 billion was given to people who are here in this country illegally, do not pay income taxes, yet they get an income tax rebate for child care or child support, and it turns out that most of these kids aren't even in this country. Who put that in there? Well, that's all hidden. And, you know, somebody got a nice chunk of whatever for that.
Oh, you're right.
Sure.
It allows tax credits, another wickedness. You know what the beauty of a tax credit is? You get to put the money in your own pocket. It never gets to go to the government. It never gets to come back from the government. So there's no paper trail. How sweet is that?
Right.
And can we talk about not transparent?
Right. Well,
over
we're
78,000 pages.
Right.
Now, this is the best one of all. The income tax code allows for the IRS. And the IRS places the government in an adversarial role with its citizens. The government is supposed to work for us, but the IRS lords it over the citizenry. That is a great example of tyranny.
Absolute.
You know, government, like fire, is a necessary evil. You know, fire is a powerful servant, but a terrible master.
I couldn't agree with you more, Earl. I mean, government, really, honestly, we need to keep it on a tight chain because it will inevitably seek to be served instead of serving. It's we got to keep a tight leash on it. We cannot do it with the current tax code.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead a little bit further here, and then I'm going to talk some more actually about the fair tax, because we do actually have a solution to this mess.
Yeah.
But I do want people to understand why I've said some of the things I have. So, who owns your body?
God or me.
There we go. I concur.
All right. Perfectly acceptable answer. So who should own the fruits of your labor?
God
or
me.
Yeah.
Perfectly acceptable answer. Now, I do need an answer for this. What is it called when you are denied the fruits of your own labor and one of you is not allowed to answer because he's been through this before?
All right, Dino, it's all over. Up to you, bud.
When you are denied the fruits of your own labor.
What would you call it if you're denied the fruits of your own labor?
Unfair.
It certainly is that. Okay, I choose a considerably harsher term. Back in the day, we had people who would work from dawn to dusk. Someone else got the fruits of their labor. It seems to me that we fought a war to end that kind of stuff.
Slavery.
That's not the very definition, the heart and soul of slavery itself.
It certainly is. Yeah, that's exactly
okay.
True.
Okay. Now, hold up your hand and take a look at it. Let's look at our pinky. If you fall in the 12.5% tax bracket and you pay the 7.5% FICA, that comes to 20%. Fold that pinky over. That much of your pay is taken before you ever see it.
Yikes.
Is it ever okay to be a slave?
No.
You're right, never. Okay. Now, let's soak the rich. Let's tax them at 32.5% and make them pay the 7.5% FICA. Pull down the next finger.
Okay.
Okay. Wiggle the three that are left. What was counted as 3/5 of a person in the original census of the United States?
A slave.
We have a tax code that has enslaved the citizens in this country. I submit to you that any tax code that enslaves the citizen in any way is inherently evil, wrong, wicked, anathema, something to be despised, destroyed, and done away with as soon as possible, especially when there are other ways to collect the taxes. Which gets me to a point. There is a difference between taxes and taxation. Do you guys know the difference between taxes and taxation?
Taxes and taxation. Taxes, would that be what
we pay?
Well, the taxation would be more along the lines of usage, right?
No.
Oh? Okay.
I'm saying
more along the lines of abusage, I would say.
Okay.
Taxes are simply the money that is taken from the private sector and put into the government's hands.
Okay.
Taxation is how that money is taken from the private sector.
Correct.
And taxation is huge.
Here
you guys have a much better understanding of why the current tax code, the taxation of the citizens, is in the process of destroying this country. Back to, is the tax code broken? No. It was designed by Marx to destroy free market economies, and the tax code is doing that better today than it ever has at any point since it was given to us.
It's doing an excellent job at it. Earl, do you mind? I don't know if you know any. Are you familiar with MacArthur's Bakery at all?
Who?
MacArthur's Bakery. They're a very prominent bakery that's been around for decades in St. Louis. And Dave has made several appearances, on Huckabee and Neil Cavuto and on Fox. Do you mind if he joins our conversation? Because if anybody knows about taxation too, it's Dave who owns the business. You don't have a problem with that, do you?
No, I have no problem.
All right, I didn't think you would. Hey, Dave, are you on with us?
I'm hanging on, listening to what's being said. Great to be here.
And this is Earl Williamson. Meet Dave MacArthur, our local business expert.
Hi, Dave. Pleased to make your acquaintance.
Pleased to hear you. Glad to hear somebody that can tote the numbers with truth behind it, and what it's doing to the economy and what it's doing to people in this country and how it's destroying business as we know it today.
Now, Dave.
Before we get too much farther, Dave, is there a chance that you and I would be able to talk after the show?
Oh, I'm sure we could. Sure.
Okay, because I've got some information for you that I think you will find very interesting.
Okay. I'm always,
but that's another story,
looking forward to getting that much smarter.
Well,
okay.
Dave, do you have any particular questions? I mean, are you familiar at all with Fair Tax?
With what was that? With which tax code? I'm sorry.
Fair Tax. I mean, it's a proposal.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I won't say that I'm well versed, but both the fair tax and the flat tax both. I've paid a little bit of attention to, and I think it's certainly something that it's the direction that this country needs to go. And I mean that is pretty evidenced by the uproar of the Romney comment this week when he states 47% of people aren't paying taxes. That in itself, when you've got more people that are dependent upon the government than are contributing to the government, we're not very far off the curve before we're a system run by those who take rather than the system by those who provide.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, let me throw something in here because I think it's extremely important. Understand that the thing I just did about enslaving the citizen,
right?
That deals with the flat tax too. I am adamantly opposed to any flat income tax. Okay.
Okay.
What we have started as essentially a flat income tax. The politicians, the lobbyists already know how to game this system. If we go to a flat tax, how quickly do you think they can put it back into this mess that we've got?
They would probably rush to do it. Yeah, it wouldn't take them long.
You know, light speed would look slow by comparison, I'm afraid.
Yes.
Now, here's the deal. What is the fair tax? The fair tax is a progressive national flat sales tax on all new goods and services for personal consumption. Business-to-business purchases are not taxed. Educational expenses are not taxed because education is considered an investment. Used items are not taxed. Cars, houses, land. It is revenue neutral. This was designed to be revenue neutral, to raise dollar for dollar the same amount of income to the federal government as is produced today. But the concept is different. Under this system, it's a tax on consumption. We tax it all: food, lodging, transportation, medicine, doctor's visits, lawyer's visits. We tax it all, but we untax the citizen up to the poverty level. It is the first ever in history non-means-tested progressive sales tax. And I said it had a flat rate, but it is a progressive sales tax.
And that's where a lot of people get confused whenever they hear that. Now, there's a terminology that's called a prebate. Could you explain that to the folks?
Sure, absolutely. Now, would you like something that wanders around a little bit, but I think it'll explain a lot? I think we actually have the time for it. This won't take too long.
Okay.
Can we both agree that there's both necessary and unnecessary food?
Yes.
Okay, if I said peanut butter, milk, and eggs, necessities or not?
Peanut butter, milk, and eggs? No, I would think that those are a staple.
Okay, if I'm allergic to peanuts, that's a jar of poison that will kill me in the most miserable fashion. If I'm lactose intolerant, the milk makes me sick. And if I just don't like eggs, who are we kidding? That is some bureaucrat, some politician picking winners and losers in the food division. Now, the prebate works like this. We're used to spending our money and getting a rebate back at the end. Under the fair tax, it works like this. 3 years ago, poverty level was $10,800 a year for a single individual. It comes to $900 a month. If I went out and I spent as an individual all of my $900 on new goods and services under the fair tax, 208 of those dollars would be taken as tax at the point of sale because it's a sales tax. The clerk takes it at the register. Okay, you're with me so far?
Right.
Yeah.
And instead of getting my $208 back at the end of the month, I get my $200, because I have a Social Security number, I have an account in my name. That $208 comes back at the beginning of the month.
Well,
so if I go out and I spend all $900 this month, my effective tax rate is zero because the $208 that's taken I already got back. But if I go out and I spend twice poverty level, my effective tax rate is only 11.5%. But if I spend $1 million this month, why, my effective tax rate is about 22.99%. Because I got back $208 that I don't need if I can afford to spend $1 million this month.
That's right.
Right.
But the reason for the prebate is equal treatment under the law. Everyone's treated the same. But it protects the truly poor, the lower middle class, because they wind up paying a smaller portion out of what they have.
Right.
them that spends the most is the ones that pays the most. It also taxes the black market industries. It taxes the illegals that come over the border. You know, when they buy their food, their lodging, their transportation, they're paying something now to support the system that catches them when they fall and break their leg, and they have to be transported home.
And they don't get a pre-tax because they don't have a Social Security number, right? Or a prebate.
That's correct.
So
it takes the tax burden from under 150 million working stiffs to over 300 million consumers, plus another 50 million guests, the tourists that come into this country.
Right.
I see. Now, the interesting thing with that, too, Earl, wouldn't that also drive or make us more competitive commercially or whenever we manufacture things? Because, like you
said... All right. Perfect example. Great. I'm glad somebody asked that question because here's the deal. Right now, we tax our goods at 35% and send them overseas. Okay?
Right.
Under the fair tax, if it's not consumed here, it's not taxed here. Automatically, our goods are immediately 35% cheaper because under the fair tax, there is no corporate tax, there is no business tax, there is no income tax. So our goods go overseas automatically 35% cheaper. That's got to be more competitive on the world market. Now, how about this stuff from China?
Right.
Where would it be consumed?
It's going to be
here.
Consumed here.
So where would it be taxed?
Here.
Here.
Right.
What does that do for the playing field?
I would say that it it did greatly. I would think it helps us. And whenever you look at also, there's
all right,
one.
Do you trust common sense?
Yeah, there's one
do
other.
Do you guys
fact.
Trust common sense?
Yes,
sure.
All right. How would you like jobs to come to the United States?
I would like that.
I'm going to give you three ways that don't believe the words that are coming out of my mouth. Just. Unless you know it to be consistent with something that you understand or if it strikes you as making common sense, then, you know, agree with it. Otherwise, treat it with skepticism. I'm going to give you what I think are three ways that this will produce jobs in the United States. Way one, as businesses, corporations, and individuals, we spend, in terms of our time, our effort, floors of corporate lawyers, 60 hours on the average for the individual, in terms of preparation of taxes to stay compliant with this over 78,000-page tax code. As a nation, we spend $400 to $500 billion with a B dollars annually. That's not counting the shifts in investments used to try and hide stuff, which takes the cost over $1 trillion, but we'll just stay with the $400 to $500 billion.
Okay.
If we pass the fair tax on April the 15th, it just becomes another beautiful spring day. That $400 to $500 billion drag on the economy, which produces, in my opinion, nothing,
right,
goes away. And if you take a drag off of the economy, that tends to make the economy perform better. But what do I know? Way two. The CEOs of the Fortune 500 were asked in a Princeton study, what would it mean to your corporation if the United States did away with all corporate and business taxes? 20% of the CEOs answered the following way. On January the 1st of the year the United States does this, we will immediately move our corporate headquarters from wherever it is in the world to the United States.
Oh, wow.
The other 80% said our next business expansion will be in the United States. In other words,
investment.
Daimler Chrysler becomes Chrysler Daimler again.
Exactly.
Wow. Now, Earl,
now, the third way,
yeah.
Yes.
No, I was going to
ask. The third way.
Go ahead. No, I was going to ask you another question, but if you haven't gone to all your points, I want you to go through your points first, but it's also dealing with businesses. So go ahead and finish your third
okay.
point.
Okay, well, I'm going to go one more here. Overseas, as individuals, businesses, corporations, as a retiree, we own over $14 trillion, with a T, trillion dollars in assets. And it doesn't come home because we have confiscatory tax policy and confiscatory tax rates. So this money stays overseas in foreign countries, stimulating economies in those countries.
Right.
If you pass the fair tax, the corporate tax, business tax, the income tax, all goes away. And this money can come home. Can you imagine what just $4 trillion unborrowed,
right,
already owned, privately invested dollars would do for our economy?
A bunch.
Now, I'm not going to say that's jobs, but wow.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense. One of the things I was going to ask you, now, whenever you had made the statement earlier that businesses, when they make transactions within themselves, they don't pay taxes, right?
Okay. If I'm Firestone and I'm selling tires to Ford,
right,
to put on trucks,
right,
no tax.
Right. So with that in effect, too, not only are you losing the corporate tax, but that, in effect, is also going to make us more competitive. Correct?
Well, yes, absolutely. It also makes the tax code transparent.
Right.
Right now, pick an object in the studio, pick it up and look at it, and pretend that that is the average object that is purchased in the United States today. How much of the cost of goods today is hidden taxes,
right,
where the driver that brings them, his taxes have to come out of that, the business, their taxes have to come out, the power company that supplies the business that gets paid, and their taxes have to come out. How much of the cost of goods today, new goods, is actually hidden taxes?
A tremendous amount. A tremendous amount.
The national average. The national average is 22%.
Wow.
22 cents out of every dollar you spend on new goods today is taxes already. Now, when you get rid of these taxes that get pulled out that way, that has to lower the cost of goods. I'm not silly enough to think that I can get all 22% out with this, but I can get a huge chunk of it out.
Sure.
You know, even if I got, you know, let's say 17% out and I wound up with 5% left.
Right.
Let's go back to that hand that was held up. You remember dropping the pinky over?
Yep.
Look at the four fingers that are left. That's what you live on. So the guy at the bottom end, he's, you know, losing 20% of his pay. But look what would happen if he were to have that back. He's living on the four fingers, which is 100% of his take home. If you lay out that other finger, that's like a 25% increase in take home pay for that guy.
Right.
You could do an awful lot of increase of 5% in the cost of goods.
Sure.
With that.
Just looking at objections and some that I've heard, some are concerned that if we don't repeal the 16th Amendment, that before this is passed, that it's just going to get incurred or added on as additional tax. What would you say to those folks?
Understand that the 16th Amendment allowed taxation on income. Previous to that, income tax was unconstitutional in the United States. So at the moment, the Congress of the United States has the means to tax absolutely everything in the country any way they deem fit.
And it just proved that.
And since no... Okay. Now, that's just a red herring. To get rid of that? Well, if you get rid of it, you get rid of the IRS and the income tax and the tax code, and what have you got left? Chaos. No, that's just... That's just stuff. That's somebody blowing smoke. Here's the deal. No bill can overturn an amendment to the Constitution. Fair tax is written such that if the 16th Amendment is not repealed within 7 years of the inception of the national fair tax, then the fair tax itself is null and void. After 2 years of not having to pay income tax, do you think anybody is going to want to go back to that mess?
Nope. No. I do not.
And this is one of the reasons why they are so afraid of it. The other part that you pointed out, the corruption, both parties are pigs at a trough when it comes to this.
Yes, they are. And both of them, whenever they're out of power, they don't want to get rid of the power of the Ways and Means Committee because, you know what, they know down the road that they're going to try to obtain that power.
Sure.
Regain it. So they want that tool.
All right, well, let's come back to the prebate because I set something up. You remember the peanut butter, milk, and eggs?
Yes.
That we talked about?
Yeah, the poison.
Under the prebate.
Yeah.
Under the prebate, since you get your tax dollars back up to the poverty level, you are free to buy according to your wants and needs. And I am free to buy according to my wants and needs. I don't have some bureaucrat picking and telling me what's good for me when he doesn't know me come here from Sikkim.
Right. Dave, I mean...
It's called freedom.
If Dave MacArthur or Dave Court, either one of them, wants to ask any questions, you know, please feel free. You guys are in the room with Dean Whiteman is with us. If anybody wants to ask any questions too, I'm sure Earl would be more than happy to discuss it.
I feel like I'm learning.
You know, where I come from is how do we make this happen? I mean, because of the power that the tax, the current status with the federal income tax brings to the federal government, both Republicans and Democrats. How do you make the change? How do you make it? How do you get the American public to see it? And then how do you force it down the throats of the elected?
Well, here's part of the problem. The fair tax has been in existence for some considerable time. The bill itself has been before Congress for close to 13 years, if not 13 years outright. This has not been marketed. It has not been branded and marketed the way it needs to be. I believe that that's going to be changing. I can tell you that currently I'm the acting executive director for Fair Tax in the state of Missouri. And that's just a story that we really don't need to go into. The point is that we're picking up more and more membership. We're picking up more and more opportunities. A tough nut for us has been St. Louis, but recently I've picked up 3 new directors in the St. Louis area to go with the one director who's been there for a while. I have 4 directors now in the greater St. Louis area, 2 co-directors in the first district, 1 in the second, 1 in the third. And these guys have taken the bit between their teeth. They're not waiting. They're going, and there's going to be some interesting things happening in the St. Louis area in terms of fair tax. We're going to do something that's a little different that has not been done by national. We're going to be, excuse me.
It's all right.
My wife has let the ferrets out. One of them has helped him up to my inserts, some of my shoes. Just the nature of ferrets, they're a great deal of fun. But, man, if it's stinky and rubbery, they love it. Anyway, back to it. We're making all kinds of progress. I will say this. The turning point for me and for the fair tax movement here in Missouri actually occurred when Republicans went into the caucuses to select candidates because a number of fair taxers figured out to put out a plank, put in the Republican platform to support the national fair tax. And it passed through 5 of the 8 congressional districts in Missouri.
Interesting.
Of course, it was ignored.
Right.
But a resolution was put up from the floor. It was voted on. It was very close, and it was quickly decided that, oh, not aggressive about things. But that's all changed. We want this passed. We want this passed yesterday. We recognize that this will completely change the dynamic of the country. Let me put it to you like this. There are researchers who have looked at this that hate it, that admit that it will work. There are those that love it, and they say crazy things.
No.
Would you like to know what the middle of the roaders say?
Yeah.
The middle of the roaders say that this should double the economy of the United States in 15 years.
I mean, it's got a lot of promise. There's no doubt about it. Dave Court had a question that he was wanting to at least a comment that he was wanting to add. Dave, what do you want?
Well, I just wanted to join in here. I had a great evening, which is why I was late getting here tonight, Kevin. I gave a dinner presentation to some college Democrats tonight on the fair tax, as it turns out, by invitation.
Sweet!
And they've actually wanted to study it a little bit and asked if I could come back at some other time. And this really goes to I believe, what Earl was talking about. And it's all about marketing. You know, we have sat back for too many years and listened to the politicians on both sides talk this thing down to the public because it's the greatest thing in the world for returning power to the people. So the politicians don't like it, but we've got to start selling this thing as probably the best thing in the world for what liberals are looking for. I mean, it takes care of the working poor. It is a huge tax cut for the middle class. It is awesomely progressive. It taxes all those things that the liberals like to gripe about, like, you know, the rich people's jet airplanes. You know, you want to have a $200,000 wedding? Well, hell, go ahead. You know, cha-ching, $240,000 tax, please.
That's why they'll hate it, Dave, as you're taking issues off the table. They
that's why Paul. Yeah.
That stuff, so, but they're going to fight this piece of mail.
So yeah, the only way to move this thing, in my eyes, is from, you know, is Reagan-esque. You know, go straight to the people and make them make their legislators do it. You're not ever going to push this in by asking legislators to do it.
That's true.
Well, let me put it to you like this: I am pleased to announce that I know that there are a number of legislators on the state level in Missouri that are fair tax supporters, advocates, have actually produced bills in this state to get rid of the state income tax and replace it with a fair tax, not just a regular sales tax, but a state version of fair tax. When I come across a candidate like that, that is the man for me, because he is for the person. He's for the individual. He's for freedom. Freedom of the citizenry. The party that gets this figured out and makes this happen is going to be rewarded for a generation.
Oh, at least. Sure. But unfortunately, they're going to lose a lot of that power, as far as the power and the influence to corruption. That they're all so exposed to. Unfortunately,
well, they're either going to lose that power, or they are going to completely overpower us, and we will be slaves to the state.
Right.
And that's not where I want my children and my grandchildren being.
No, absolutely.
I find that unacceptable.
I agree with you, Earl. As far as, and I'm
so
trying
anyway.
To think, those are the main objections that I've heard whenever, so if you've got any other that you'd like to address, or if Dave or Dean has any questions or comments, guys, feel free to jump in, or Earl, if you've got another point that you'd like to make.
Oh,
well,
you're
you're talking to a retired school teacher. I love the sound of my voice, and I can talk about fair tax for hours.
Well, Kevin.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's take a look at some things here, unless somebody has a question, in which case, otherwise I'll go and I'll start picking on stuff and
shooting stuff at you. I think Dave Cord had one for you. What was that, Dave?
Well, here's something else that I like to talk about when I talk about the fair tax, and this is important to both liberals and conservatives. Again, everybody, both sides, talks about needing to cut federal spending, cut federal spending, cut federal spending. You know, Ron Paul stands up there and says, in my first year, I'll cut $1 trillion in federal spending. Well, Ron Paul didn't back the fair tax, so that's bull crap. Because, you know, you cannot seriously talk about cutting $1 trillion, and that doesn't even erase this year's deficit, in federal spending until you have something in place that is going to grow the private sector as quickly as you are shrinking the public sector, because for every trillion you cut, you are unemploying another million people.
Now, so, this is – sure. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, so the advantage of the fair tax is that you do increase employment because you
exactly.
do allow business
exactly.
and everything else to take off and thrive. So
that's right.
Those that would be lost on the government side would be able to come over, which gets me to – a side point here. How would you like me to turn an IRS agent from a heel into a hero?
Yay.
I can actually do that, you know.
Well, fill us in, Earl. Tell us how you turn
okay.
an IRS heel into a hero.
All right. Well, this is easy. You pass the fair tax, and April the 15th, like I said before, becomes a beautiful spring day. Now, IRS goes away, which means because the tax code is automatically null and void under the fair tax, it's gone. So you take your IRS agents and you'll transfer a few of them to the Treasury, because the 80,000 businesses, the 50 states, and whatever entities collect the federal sales tax will have to be monitored. That's legitimate use. The rest of them could be fired and put into that reduction soup. However, these people work. They pay taxes like you and me, and they have to be probably as ticked off as to how it's wasted as you and I are. How about let's keep these people because they've got some skills and talents, and let's turn them loose on waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, welfare, military contracting, you name it. I bet these people will save way more than their pay in ferreting out that stuff.
Especially in this.
Then they'll be working for you and me instead of against. They'll be working for themselves, too.
I don't know. Don't we need a revolution first before something like that would happen?
It always goes to violence with Dean.
No, I'm just thinking that there is, I can't imagine one politician
right.
that's going
right.
to be.
If they're going to fight it tooth and nail. And
oh,
what they're going to
yeah.
do is they're going to throw every kind of scare tactic in the world. I mean, both of them. You think Medicaid and all the other Social Security scare tactics are big. You wait till this hits. And I'm not trying to be negative, it's just, man, that's what we can expect from these guys because we're cutting into their bread and butter.
Well, K Street hates it, and when we do this, you have to understand we're attacking the opposite side of the Fed.
Right.
I mean, there's so much power that is rooted in Washington that, yeah, but this
oh, yeah.
is the economic answer. You could double the taxes that we currently have, and it's not going to solve the problem.
Right.
And the reason why we don't have anything about spending, cutting spending on the fair tax side is, you know, this was designed as tax, dollar for dollar, the same amount of income. Why are you against it, Mr. Politician? The answer
right.
we know now is that they, you know, I'd say they're corrupt. Mr. Aiken, for example, is a hot topic at the moment.
But Mr. Akin is an interesting choice for me because Mr. Akin is a co-signer of the National Fair Tax Bill in Washington. He is a proven commodity on that. He carries water for it.
Right.
And if elected to the Senate, he will continue to.
And
there are 70 co-signers in the House, and I think 10 in the Senate at the moment. But it's the kind of a thing where there are more and more. Now, some are lip service and not the real deal. But there are the real deals in there.
Right.
And we need more of them.
Sure, absolutely.
And there's some interesting things that are happening. I'll tell you right now, in Kansas,
mm-hmm.
in Kansas, in the primaries, they targeted 12 of their state senators that were Rhino Republicans. And they went after them, and they got 8 of them tossed in the primaries. They got them replaced with fair taxers.
Well, I'll be. Yeah, I mean, that's the best way to accomplish this. That and educating the public. Real quick, Earl, too, would you tell the folks how they can find out which politician is supporting it? Is there a website? Is there something else that you can give everybody so that they can research this a little more?
Okay. In Missouri, there is not a good setup for that yet, but the model is, at this point, I would say Kansas. You
okay.
go to Show Me the Chips.
Okay.
It's the political chips, and the prosperity chip is the fair tax. And
now,
since the prosperity chip touches on all the others, it is crucial.
Now,
in Kansas.
What about
in Missouri?
Is there a fairtax.org or something like that they could find out more information on the fair tax, too?
Oh, yeah. There's the national site.
Right.
Is fairtax.org.
Okie dokie.
Fairtax is one word. Fairtax.org.
Sure. You guys can shoot by there. Dave MacArthur had a quick question or comment that he wanted to make, too. Dave, what do you want to add?
Well, you know, I was just going back to the politicians that they could make this thing happen. You know, how do we get behind them? I mean, that's the problem. You've got these local politicians and the state, you know, having learned a little bit about the entrenchedness of the Republican Party primarily in this state and the old blood, what I call the old Bush Republicans, you know, the first thing we have to do before we can make anything happen is we have to flush the toilet of these guys that have been in the party for the last 20 years because they're never going to let anything happen. Right. And, I mean, we've got to start with some of these new reps at the state senators and the House people. And they're the ones that have to make a change of our state party. And if we don't make that change, nothing's ever going to happen in the state of Missouri.
I think it's a great
comment. Can I throw an oar in the water here?
Sure, Earl.
I know that in the West, with redistricting, there is a fellow who was a state representative who wrote the original Missouri Fair Tax Bill based on the national fair tax. This man successfully ushered it through the House of Representatives a number of years ago, and the Senate refused to move on it, to even allow the people to have a vote. Now,
yeah,
this man
point.
Defeated his run for Senate, but with redistricting, he was in a new district, and he ran. He won the Republican primary against probably the foulest campaign manager that the Republican Party had. They threw everything at him, every lie that is used against the fair tax, and this man refuses to crawl down in the gutter and play dirt ball. He won't do it. This man is a God-fearing Christian man, and he is a solid fair taxer, which tells you he is for freedom for the individual, for the country, for people. He's on the right side of things. He's on the wrong side of the leadership of his party. but he's right for the grassroots, and that would be Mr. Ed Emery, who is running for a state Senate seat in the West.
There's
yeah, and that's what we've got to have more of. I mean, we've got to get these guys that are going to stand up against these entrenched, you know, I don't know what their, you know, their true titles are, but these guys that live in Jeff City and hold the reins over the Republican Party in this state. They've held the reins for far too long, and we've got to elect. You know, I think of the person over on this side of the state. You know, down here in South County, oh, God, I just went brain dead. Kevin, help me out. Who are we talking about down here?
Now, you're talking about somebody that's sitting in office or somebody that's working in...
Yeah, no, he's in office now, you know, down here in my district right here in South County.
Carnahan?
Jim Lemke.
You're not
Jim
talking Lemke. About Brian Nevis, are you?
No.
No, well, Nevis Jim is another, Lemke. You know... Yeah, Jim Lemke, right. I mean, these are the kind of powerhouses that I believe that you have to get on our side, because they're you know, here you've got a Republican that has won the office in a primarily Democrat district, and if things are going to happen, these are the kind of guys that we've got to get on board, because they're not on board with the entrenched, you know what I call the rhinos out of Jefferson City.
No, they're not.
Well,
I agree with Dave.
Yeah, there's rhinos all over. But I'll tell you what would make an interesting program for you is to find out about the CHIPS program out of Kansas, because that, I believe, is coming to Missouri. And there is so much that is so positive about that what it is it's a vetting. It does, these people do the work and they actually vet the candidates. And you wind up with some people actually worth voting for. This lesser of two evils is something I can no longer tolerate. Evil is evil. If it's a lesser evil, it's still evil. I cannot vote for it. If it gets voted in, it becomes a greater evil, and we just don't need any more of it.
Well said.
I agree 100% there.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it.
Guys, we're going to have to close here in just a couple of minutes. I'd like to get some closing statements from both of you as we wrap up the show. Let's start with Dave MacArthur. Go ahead and share anything that you want as we close things out.
Well, I'll just back off a little bit, you know, to what we saw. I'll repeat myself. What we saw at a national level this week, you know, how if you think that that the federal income tax doesn't bear weight and control power, you know, you saw what the Democrat Party and our national press corps, how they got on board against what the truth is, and that is, you know, who is and who isn't paying taxes. And of course, you know, what Rami said, 47%, it may not be the exact number, 39-42%, but I like what, you know, what he's talking about here. But, you know, if we could throw our illegal aliens into that, what would that number be? And all the people in the black market and the drug market and all the other things, that all of that money that's going into the system, but it's failed to be taxed, and these people get away with murder with it. So, you know, I'm 100% behind of it, exactly what, you know, has been said on here tonight, and just, you know, because when I view what my cost of goods have done the last years, and it's just, you know, taxes is at all corners. I mean, it's just, you know. It's got to cease, or if it doesn't cease, we will cease. And well, that's, you know, that's where I'll leave it.
You're 100% right, Dave. And would it be all right if I go ahead and I text you Earl's number after the program?
Yeah, that would be great. Sure, go ahead,
Earl,
and do that.
That's fine with you too, right, Earl?
Oh, I'd love to have a talk with this gentleman.
Yeah, he's a wealth of knowledge.
Absolutely.
And he's great. I mean, he knows business. That's what he's done. What's your closing statements, Earl?
Well, pay attention, folks. There's a lot that you can do. If you need to get a hold of me, my email address is earlwilliamson@gmail.com. My mailbox is pretty well exploding on a daily basis. I don't guess this is going to make much difference. But if you want to get a hold of me, I can put you in contact with Fair Tax Across the State. You know, we can
we're growing. But I'll tell you right now, our point man, Rob Woodall, in Washington, D.C., has given us the heads up that within 6 months, no matter who wins the election, the hot topic in Washington is going to be tax reform. If we want fair tax to be considered at all, we have to get a place at the table. Currently, the 37 members of the House Ways and Means Committee have two fair taxers that sit on the committee. One is a constitutional, conservative, honest-to-Pete fair taxer. The other is a rhino. So we have 1.5 feet under that, 1.5 people at that table.
Right.
But these people are making decisions for all of us in the country. So everybody who would be in favor of fair tax needs to do 5 things. You write a letter to every one of the 37. You send an email to every one of the 37. You send a tweet to every one of them. Borrow somebody's, you know, if you have to. Send a
call.
Facebook to every one of them, and you send a phone call to every one of them.
Sure.
Now, for an individual like me, that's 37 phone calls, 37 tweets. You know, but it's going to happen, and in order to do that, you've got to begin to get organized now.
Again, folks, it's EarlWilliamson@gmail.com. Earl, I want to thank you for coming on with us tonight. We'll keep in there's a couple other things I'd like to do in shows with you down the way, and we will if you're interested, I think it would be great, and we'll figure
out.
I'll
be happy to help with that.
All righty, brother. Well, thank you for coming this evening, and I appreciate all your input.
Thank you very much. I look in the future.
Thanks, Earl. Now, Dino, any closing statements from you as we hit the road?
He was just a wealth of knowledge. I was a little scared, I guess is the word I'd say, when the statement was made that you could double the tax that we're paying right now and it wouldn't fix the problem.
And it's true. I mean, $1.6 trillion deficit is to my knowledge, that's what the latest numbers were, and I'd like to thank Dave MacArthur for calling in. Dino, I'd like to thank you for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me,
Dave Court. Thank you for your questions and your contributions to the show. You're listening to Hillbilly Logic, and thank you all for listening. And good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.